got it before. So then we dig into your capital infrastructure. You guys have an amazing transfer station. The buses are actually in really great condition. But we looked at your shelters, your poles. What can we do out at the shelters to make them more attractive, to bring amenities so that we protect our people when they're out waiting for the bus to come? So you have an inventory in your report of your existing capital pieces. Then, of course, we look at ridership. This is the number one thing that all transit managers look at. You can see the trends on the top left. We went back to 2015 to the old study. There is a dip in ridership for the COVID era, which every transit agency in the United States had that craziness happen. Also, what's a little bit unique is you guys typically have your highest ridership in late summer and fall. There's a dip in the winter months, which is also not a shocker with bad weather. People just don't go out as much. But for 10 years, 5 years, that trend has been the same, you know what I mean? So planning on that in the future, you know your biggest ridership is going to be in that fall and making sure that we plan appropriately when that happens. Before I go into goals, any questions, you guys, just about this first data that were in the report? All right, we're going to keep trucking here then. So every plan starts out with goals and objectives. The biggest message that we heard from the PTAC, from the Como management, is we need to make sure we get out to our community. We need to listen to our members. We need to listen to our people that use our service. So we, old council, we were here interviewing you. It was a long time ago, but you guys are a big piece of this. You represent your neighborhoods and your groups, and so we're very grateful for the time. We had many, many stakeholders. We were also out at the transfer station. We had open houses, and you know, truly, it's wonderful to see that the community is very involved in Columbia. We work in some areas where they're not, and so it's really great that they come out. Sometimes they have a lot to say, sometimes they just want to hear what's going on. You definitely get a mix, but the main thing is they care about their service, and that's what we care about. Planning priorities. So when we talk to our community, to our stakeholders, some of the main questions that we wanted to share just as a summary is, number one says, what do you think is more important, A or B? A is run buses more frequently on existing routes, and B, add or extend routes to new destinations. And remember, when this study was going on, we had moved from 45-minute headways to 90 headways. So it's not a surprise that there was a strong preference for people just to have more frequent bus service. We anticipated that, but it certainly is what we heard from the folk. Number two, we gave another comparison. Serve as much of Columbia as we can, or concentrate in high ridership areas. This one kind of scored in the middle. So some people do want more, but some people were okay just looking at the core of Columbia. The third call out we just wanted to talk about, mention, was add more service during the peak period. So we're busiest in the morning and the afternoon, or add more service during the off-peak time on the nights and the weekends. Now this one, a little bit different, is there was a very strong preference for people to have service in the evening and on the weekends. That's a very common response with many transit studies, but when you guys have had a major change from 45 minutes to 90s, we didn't know where that was gonna shake out when we went out to the community. Yes, ma'am.
How many people did you have participating in this?
Ooh,
I don't know. Scaling,
I might have to get
choices
back with you. I mean, I can easily say from council to stakeholders to people that were at the open house, I could at least say we had 100 from different, but there were many over several different times. But I'd say 100 at each event with feedback. But I do know we went out for surveys too, and it was well above 100, but just off the top. I can get you an exact answer on another day, but sorry, I don't know it off the top of my head.
Ballpark, yeah, is close enough. Number,
yeah,
three really surprises me.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, and sometimes we never know.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know.
And the last one we wanted to just call out for the presentation for y'all is Options of routes that travel quickly but with fewer destinations often requiring you to walk a little bit further versus routes that serve many destinations directly but cause the route to be very slow, so your bus is stopping at many different stops. Strong preference for frequent trips. Get me there as fast as I can. And so that was the preference from what we heard in the community. And on the right-hand side is just the picture of the different dots that you can see that people answered to give us those summary answers. So then what did we learn in the key takeaways? There was a general agreement that the services are more limited than they should be. And again, we're at the 90-minute headways when we did much of this outreach. But given our city's size, the expectation from our community is that people want more. And so that will continue to drive where you guys are going in the future. Number two bullet, recruitment and retention of staff is a high priority. Make sure we're a place that people want to come and work, that we do amazing things and we want our staff to feel that too. The last bullet talks about the current routes. They make sense and they do serve key destinations that many of our riders do want to go to. So that's a good thing for our staff to hear, that they've done a great job on the route planning themselves. And as you guys know, major destinations, shopping and workplaces and medical facilities are usually your top. Yes, sir.
This is actually more for Shane.
This is more for Shane. Given that this information is roughly a year old, where are we at as far as staffing for bus drivers?
I know Mike brought that information, Tony.
As of today, we have 29 full-time drivers, that's both CDL and Class E. We have 4 part-time drivers. We have 1 driver that's onboarding right now and 3 that are in the process of being hired.
Okay, and what would be full staffing?
40.
40 total.
40 total full-time drivers.
That adds up, what does that add up to? 35?
Yep.
Okay. So
36, if we could maintain a census of 36 consistently, we could start thinking about changing our timing.
Okay.
But that's gonna take some time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, really great question, like where we've come. And Mike, your lowest staffing level during scraping, what was it?
About 25.
25 was his answer. So you can't even make pullouts in the morning and the afternoon, which that's never where any transit agency wants to be. But if you don't have people, we don't have buses. So yeah. Yep, so good news to be where we are, probably 90% capacity for staff. So 100 is where we want to be and we're close, so good news. Okay, then we go on to talk about the vision that was established and what we heard from all of our stakeholders. Number one, focus on recruitment of staff. I think that you'll hear that a lot in this message. Number two, meet the needs of our riders who need transit service. So make sure we're serving our transit-dependent population and they get what they want as financially feasible as we can make it happen. Number three, prioritize near-term actions, or we have called them short-term, improving services, frequencies, and the hours of service. Number four, make sure that we align the long-term transit vision with what we see and what is developing within the community of Columbia. And then number five, it says, make sure we're taking advantage of opportunities to add county-level and regional services. Because as you all know, there is a need for transit service outside of Columbia in our periphery area and then also in Boone County. And so how can we make sure we're serving all of our
Can I ask a question there?
Yes, sir.
Can you fill that out more, what that might look like when you're talking about county level and regional services?
We're getting there. You're dot, dot, dot.
I'll
yes.
Leave you alone.
No, don't leave alone. Great question coming soon. What were our goals and strategies for service concepts? So we have many ideas, you guys. We have many things that are wonderful ideas for Columbia, but we needed to make sure that when we have this entire bucket of ideas that we're narrowing those so that they're feasible and financially feasible. So taking all of that piece that we focused on near-term concepts, which is at the bottom of the slide, and long-term. So we have budget neutral scenarios that we would just keep doing what we're doing today. And then we have those incremental changes that go to long-term that align with what we're seeing in our peer agencies, but also align with what our community said that they want to have. One example of this for service, we had heard, do people want more frequent service or do they want more coverage? So the map on the left-hand side shows that you have six routes that are serving this. You would have frequent service in this particular, you know, map. If you spread out your service, then this is a very different concept with different headways. And so what did our community say they want? The one on the left with more frequent service. Now, you will hear some of our feedback as the report is written that we do want more regional service too. So there's, how do we do both? Well, just a little more money. That's all that comes down to, but we still have to prioritize. So then get into the recommendations. You know, we do all of this work. We hear from our folk. What does that really mean that we can do and make things happen? So overall, implementation takes time, and no one wants to hear that. We can't flip a switch, even though everybody wants to, but it takes time to gather funding if it's a new funding source. It takes time, as Mike said, to hire staff. So we are 2 years post-COVID mostly, and we're just getting there. So just making sure that when we go out into the community, we're very realistic for people to say, we're going to make this happen as soon as we can, but please know it does take time for us, you know, to make it happen. So bullet one says operate and maintain services and our infrastructure. So we have a great service today. We need to make sure that baseline is taken care of, from our buses to our drivers to our riders, you know, make sure we're maintaining what we have. Then as we build and receive new funding, we can build on top of that to get where we want to go. Number two, purchase capital resources, bus shelters, buildings. You know, buses this day and age are $700,000 per vehicle. If they're an e-bus, electric bus, or other, they're over $1 million now. So if we don't have a garage to park those in, how does that work out, guys? Not very well. The life of the vehicle just significantly decreases. So when we are looking at capital resources, everybody says, and we do need new vehicles, but we've got to make sure we have the infrastructure to have those here too. Then the third one, hire and retain high-performing employees. Provide safe, reliable, and customer-friendly transportation service. Train your people. That is one of our diehards that I'll preach in my 30 years of doing this crazy world, that you can never have too much training. Even at 30 years, I learn something new every day. But if we hire good people and they're here for the right reason, then we know that we're going to have good transit service on the road. So tier one, you guys, so this slide is a summary of a whole section in your report. And tier one, I'm gonna read you the note on the very right-hand side, this bottom right-hand corner. It says, you will not see a change in the route map. So there's nothing new for routes in this tier one. And as you know, the summary table says baseline. So this is what we're doing. We have weekday, Saturday, and Sunday. These are hours. Tier one, we don't see a lot of change with hours. Frequency, 45-90, 45-90. But you guys see day and evening, we would have evening service moving to tier one. And again, this is a whole chapter in your report, so it's just a summary slide. How many buses would we have out there? 6, 3 on the weekend, 0, and no Sunday service yet. We're moving to tier one, 6 + 3 in the evening, 3. We don't have Sunday yet in tier one. Now, today on our baseline service, 20,000 revenue hours. When we move to tier one, we're adding almost a little over 4,000 hours. What does that mean? It means buses on the road so that we can get folk. Now, of course, if you move from 20,000 hours to 24, that's an increase in costs. So we've got to figure out the funding to make that happen. But as you guys can see, this is baby steps to get to where we want to go. So a summary of that, I mean, the big piece is people were like, well, I don't see any change on the map. Well, they're right. There isn't a change in tier one because it's putting more frequent service out, which is what we heard from our community.
Can I ask you really quick?
Yes.
When we're referring to evening, when does that like 90 minute, when's the recommendations for when it's the 45 minute and when it's switch over to the 90 minute?
When we had, let's see. Are you talking for the exact time of day or like when
would that happen? Is it the idea is it's kind of after going home from work and then, or like how late did we start that?
Usually it's right up between 6 and 7, Shane. When do you guys do, is that still your shift right now?
6:40.
So it's kind of like what our existing is for baseline and then 6:40 to 10:25.
Yeah, your evening. And usually there's one bus that's still rotating, like you have one a little bit later driver and then they'll shift into those evening and then your schedule may change. So you may have evening service versus like your daytime schedules. Yeah, great question.
I also have a quick question. We're comparing it to baseline. Are we currently at baseline service?
No.
Right. So this would be
assumption of
this would be an improvement over baseline, and baseline would be an improvement over current service. Mm-hmm. So it's a significant improvement over current service.
Correct. And how close are we to baseline today, though? Much closer than when we're a
driver. If what Mike said was true, 36. I heard you, and you counted 35.
Well, and what we've noticed is it kind of goes like this. And so if all of the folks we're trying to onboarding right now get on board, we'd be at 37. Historically, you won't get all three. And you'll lose a couple, and you'll gain one, and you'll gain three, and you'll lose two. And so at the end of this, we're going to come forward with what I call kind of the State of Transit Council report at a future meeting to kind of show you what that's looked like since we combined routes. We wanted to get through the transit study first and then come forward with that, but we'll show you that along with ridership and what we're seeing in paratransit and that sort of thing.
Because is your thought that you want to have a certain amount of months of full, of at least the 35, 36 or whatever before you feel confident?
Yes, the major reason when we combined routes, we wanted to get back to fully staffed and be there for 6 months, something like that. Because the last thing I want to do is uncombine routes, lose drivers, and then combine routes again. So I need to have some kind of level of comfort with where we're at. And we haven't even gotten back there yet. And so that's really the trick is how long do I wait before we uncombine routes? But like I said, the last thing I want to do is go back and forth. Because that's what our biggest concern when we combined routes was our inability to provide that service. And then when it breaks, it doesn't break evenly, meaning I'd be combining two routes over here and providing the same service over there, depending on how much staff I had. So that gave us some cushion to continue to provide consistent service that everyone could at least count on.
And Shane, in that report, when you do it, will you also show, because you just mentioned the example of the three that you're potentially going to be bringing on, will you also show when we lost, you know, like kind of like how long they, you know what I mean, when we've lost drivers versus when.
Yeah, and in very, very general terms, for obvious reasons.
Right.
Some of the reasons that's the case, because it varies.
Okay. We've got Betsy and then Valerie have questions.
Do we have any idea why it is that we are having such, continuing to struggle on hiring and keeping drivers?
First thing I'd tell you, it's a nationwide problem. If you Google transit and staffing, you'll find lots of places that are doing similar things to what we're doing at different levels.
Okay.
So that's part of it. I also think that at the price point, this, you know, where your drivers get paid, they have other options of things that they can go do. And there's quite a heavy process. It isn't just being a commercial, having a commercial driver's license, but there's a whole other level of scrutiny, background check, medical check, things like that. And we lose some folks in that process, whether it's the time it takes to get through that process. If you can imagine not having a job
and trying to get through that process and having an offer to go someplace else. We lose some folks that way. And some of it is just not wanting to deal with that or not being able to get qualified one way or another.
And all of our drivers need to be CDL drivers?
Everyone except we have a Class E position, but they can only drive paratransit vans.
Okay.
So in order to drive a fixed route bus, you have to have a CDL.
And is that because of the length of the bus?
Or what? Partly number of people you're carrying. There's a variety of factors, but yeah, that's the main one.
Is there any way to change the way we do things where we don't have to have CDL drivers? You still have to have qualified drivers. I mean, they need to know what they're doing, but is there a way not to make them all CDL?
It's a federal requirement. And then the thing we hear a lot, just to head that off the pass, is why we buy the size of the bus that we do.
Yeah.
All that's federally funded. And so heavily federally funded. And so those are the buses you can use the grants to buy. So buying something else, you'd be buying on your own. So,
but wouldn't something else be cheaper and then we could actually get drivers? I mean, are we sort of getting stuck in this whole federal government is providing these and making all these rules and we can't match what we need to? I mean, it's just
it wouldn't be dramatically cheaper to go to a smaller.
Okay.
So I think from an economics perspective, we're doing exactly what the best thing we can from that perspective. And that's why you see that all over the country, the same kind of issues at different levels, depending on how much local funding is infused into transit, how much state funding. She's going to talk about a little bit of that as we go along. That's a big factor in all this is funding. It all comes down to funding, I think. That's all
said and done. Thanks.
Been talking about staffing. On an average day, we'll have anywhere from 2 to 5 drivers that are being called in sick or out for vacations or whatever. So that automatically reduces the number that we can put on the road on a daily basis. Another factor that is not often thought about is that the average age of a bus driver is about 47 years of age. And so we're attracting people who are getting close to the end of their career, not necessarily at the beginning of their career. So I have one driver right now that's leaving in October, one driver that has put in their retirement papers for January, and I have 3 others that are eligible today if they choose to do that. So there's a lot of factors, but that aging workforce is something that is going to be really something to deal with in the future for transit.
Yeah, and I'll just point out, too, you have a good section in the report where it talks about kind of the nationwide trend on staffing and recruitment and what other places are doing. So I'm assuming that we're kind of taking some lessons learned from those peer cities.
Someone else had a
question. Valerie did. Yep.
Yeah, can you tell me the map here for baseline? Mm-hmm. Or I guess this is the tier one map. Is baseline with the combined routes or with the routes that we want to have?
So tier one is going back to what we provided before we combined routes, so 45 minute turnarounds, and then we've extended in tier one. They've also extended hours later during the week and on the weekend.
Baseline is both the 90 minutes and the combined.
So the way the study was done, it was they wanted to show tier 1 through 4, but they kind of talked about a tiers 0 or whatever, and that was just to get back to baseline. Staff back up, uncombined routes, get back to where we were before we did that, and then build from there.
How long do we think it will take to get to tier 0, the old baseline?
A lot of it's going to depend on staffing. And so we've been working since the time we've combined. And at no point have I been fully staffed, and at no point have I been comfortable to uncombine routes because of my fear of them up and down.
Fully staffed plus 6 months, whatever that math comes out to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
I was just going to add one other thought to the, there's a never-ending question about size of buses, and Councilwoman, you had just asked, why don't we get smaller vehicles? You can always buy smaller vehicles, but you can only fit so many people in there, and then you have to run another bus right behind it, which is another driver. And so there's all this yin and yang that if you would ever choose in this city to go to smaller vehicles, your capacity issues will become a challenge, and then you will be needing more drivers to actually meet the capacity. So many agencies do look at that, because if you can have a cheaper bus, cheaper buses have to be replaced more often. They usually have a 5 or 7 year vehicle life. Your buses have a 12-year vehicle life cycle right now. So lots of things in that tiny question that you asked that to be considered, you know, with that. Good question. Anybody else? All right, we're gonna keep going, guys. So tier two, building on baseline, tier one we just talked about, and then tier two, and there is a change to the map, which is a good thing. But I'll start with the service hours again. You can see we start a little bit earlier, still go until 10:30 at night. We do have Saturday service, we don't have Sunday yet, so in tier two. Frequencies, we are going daytime to evening, so 30-minute service. Who can wait for that? Yeah. Bring it on, that's it. This is what people will look forward to. This is what we want to see. Saturday service, we have service every hour. Want to see that too. Still no Sunday service again. The number of buses, as you guys can see during the daytime, you'd have 9 out on the road, and in the evening you'd have 6 with those service hours. Look at our jump here, though. We go from 24,000 annual hours with tier one to just under 40,000. So you're basically doubling. So you can imagine that doubles a budget. We have to have the vehicles to do that too. So it is a big jump. This is what we heard from our community, so this is what we want to be aiming towards.
Can I ask you a quick, oh, it's over here.
Yes, go ahead.
So this is just something I kind of noticed on the last slide, and I'm noticing on this one, because you're going to reference in a little bit the funding needs for the VRHs. Mm-hmm. This number is different than what's in the report, at least I'm fairly certain this is the most recent report. I like, not that it's that big of a jump, but I have 38,474 in the report that was attached.
Okay.
And then similarly to the last one, because you had mentioned 24,000, I have 23,000 in the report.
Oh,
so,
okay. I'm glad to know. Yeah, thank you for telling me. We shouldn't have a difference like in the final report. So if there's a change, then so sorry about that. We should have had the numbers in the final report. I do know we looked at a few changes because we did get comments back from council. So this may be the updated, but I'll need to check. I don't want to tell you wrong, but I'll
just tell me which one is presentation or report.
Thank you. Well, we'll get it fixed. Yeah, I'm so sorry. Thank you for finding it. Good eagle eye. However, just to note that still doubling our hours, which is the big piece of that. If you look at our frequent service, the 30 minutes, do you love to see that on Broadway? Would love to see that on Broadway. So again, you guys, this is a great goal to have. We want to continue to strive toward this. The specifics of this, again, are in the chapter for tier two, and this is a media goal. We would love to see this happening within 5 years. Now, all of that is, we've got to get to baseline, we've got to get to tier one, and then we need to get to tier two. So you guys can see the time that it will take us to get there. But again, your community is asking us to make sure we have representation of what their vision is for the future. So questions on tier two summary. Okay, then we happen to have an alternative. Because we did want to have some options, and this goes to Councilman your question about more regional service and employment driven service. So this tier two talks about a purple route that is added to not necessarily a high density area, but we've got a pocket of high employment along that corridor, and how do we get our people to work and get them home again? So this alternative does include a purple route that serves the Paris Road and Route B corridor. The difference by adding that is not all of our buses would meet at the transfer station at the same time. There'd be like a 15 or a 20 minute wait, but they do go to the same location, so you could transfer buses, which is good. But it does give you, I thought we had a map of the purple. I think it's later on, you guys. I'm sorry, I thought I had one in here, but it's not in here. But we do want to make sure that there is an option, that if there is funding that becomes available to help us serve our employment destinations in the community, that we at least have the costs and the hours in there to get there.
Can I clarify on that? Because one of the things I believe we've heard in the past about that was about that third shift. Mm-hmm. And do these times meet those needs of the third shift? Okay.
They would meet one end of that, because typically third shift may be 11 p.m. to 7 or a 10 to 6, you know, depending on who the manufacturers are, whatever business. So we could serve somebody getting there. We might be able to get them off if they have an 8-hour shift, but if they have a 10 there, you know, or a shorter one, they wouldn't. Or if their shift is midnight to 8 or midnight to 6, we could get them in the morning, but we might not be able to get them there at night. That often happens. Yeah, great, great.
Yeah,
got it. I thought we had heard back from, I don't know if it was employers or from Ready at one point, that the employers were operating their own shuttles for the Route B corridor, but the thing that they struggled with was getting in candidates for job interviews. So they had shuttles for their employees, but not those who were prospective applicants.
And actually, our team and then the COMO staff met with the chamber and the representatives from that corridor. I think that's a solution for one or two of the employers. I'm not sure that's for the general consensus. And we talk about that just a little bit at the end, because we had finished this study and then we actually went out to talk to the employers and surveyed. Our response was not good, actually. I mean, you can't twist people's arms to do a survey. I think we did a pretty good job going to them, which is usually that, but
thanks.
Yeah. So, yes, so any other questions about this one, though, and I'll keep going and we'll talk more about that in just a few. All right. So tier three, you guys, we're not quite to tier four as Shane has prepared you for. But again, you guys, this is a huge jump in addition to the service. The Paris Route B, here's the purple map, sorry, that was coming up. It's in your northeast corner, as you guys see. Again, if you look at your service days, for the first time in tier three, here we go. We finally have Sunday service all, and so that's a good news. We do have Sunday added with the tier two alternative. We did not have it in the original tier two. Our hours are extended to 11:30 at night, not 10:30. If you look at the frequencies, you have 30-minute service in the daytime, 60 in the evening, 60 on Saturdays, and 60-minute headways on Sunday. The buses, the number of buses, we have 13 peak vehicles out there, and then 6 in the evening. Saturdays, you have 7 out there, and Sundays, you would have 7 vehicles on the road. So if you look at those hours, we're not quite doubling, but we're just under 60,000 revenue service hours. We have an amazing system here with frequent service to areas that we do not serve today, and they have frequent service. So it's a really great vision. It's a great goal to go towards. And the challenge will be us today from our baseline of 20,000 moving to almost 60,000 hours. So you're tripling the amount of buses and service on the road. It's a really great service. Yeah. Questions about tier three? Yes, ma'am.
Talking about, I guess, regional service and new routes. I read about this in your study. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is in this part or perhaps you have a later slide on this. There was some discussion about working with MoDOT on a route to and from Jefferson City. Mm-hmm. I have gotten a number of people contacting me with interest in a regional route between us and Jefferson City. Mm-hmm. Where are we on that? Is this, how long term is that goal?
So we do talk about that. After we gave this presentation and y'all adopted it, we did look into regional service. There is funding through the Federal Transit Administration. 5311F monies are inner city bus funds, and the route between Jeff City and Columbia qualifies if you meet certain criteria. And to my knowledge, that needs to be explored more because, as you all know, the state did cut funding. And I think they would be very interested. I'm not sure of their funding outlook, and they may say, oh, those monies are spoken for. But you all still have a very good potential route, and you've heard it. It was documented in your 2016 study because we heard that need back then. It was documented in this study too. And when we are going to MoDOT to look at future services, that would be one option that we would encourage you to go after that funding.
And would running that service pull from our city's staff? Or do we need to look at, I mean, can we share staffing options with Jefferson City?
Do you want to talk on that? I have thoughts, but you go ahead.
Well, I know 90% sure that one of the multimodal or transit unfunded needs lists, on MoDOT's unfunded needs list, is something regarding a route between Jeff City and Columbia. It's just that, it's an unfunded thing from a state level. I think when we saw the cut in state funding and the staffing issues that we were having, we didn't pursue that interaction with Jeff City as of yet. I feel like we need to get into a different tier ourselves to really make that a viable thing, to have that discussion. That doesn't mean we can't do it separate from all those things. It was just transit was concentrating on staffing and, you know, kind of implementation of this before we were looking at that specifically.
I would certainly prefer to see us in a better tier locally before we go regionally. But I will voice the concerns of constituents. I also don't want us to lose track of those goals and those pools of funding that we're eligible for.
If the monies are out there, you have a definite potential route that could be. If the monies aren't, they'll say, we'll wait till the next allocation comes at the state level and the federal level. So, but you now have documentation from the Columbia side that says, hey, we do have interest. But again, when I worked on your 2016 study, that was one of the needs spoken 10 years ago. So it doesn't shock me that you're still hearing that. And we know you have a major and employer in Jefferson City. You have students up here. That route is run every day. So I don't think it's off the thing. You know, Shane and Mike and Shannon, they can send a note. I do know MoDOT is currently looking at an intercity bus study, and I'm sure that route will come up, and it'll be interesting for you all to find out. That study is just starting, and it'll take a year to get done, but they can pay attention to where that goes, and they have really great resources in this study to talk about that and contribute to that one, and I think that's a very viable next step for the staff here.
Is that something you can report back to us after that study is done? I'm looking at our
For sure.
Thank you.
It wouldn't shock me if Shane becomes a committee or a you know, can you sit on our committee? You know, like those of the study. It wouldn't surprise me if that comes.
Not that I'm
giving him more to do, but they do need people that have heard this, that have representation and know the needs. So don't be shocked. I do know the study just kicked off though, so it takes a year to get it done, but certainly we have good evidence here of what was collected, you know, through this.
Thanks.
Yeah, Sarah's got a question.
Oh, yeah.
I have a process question. At what point in this process do we determine where the actual bus stops will be that are having this frequency?
So great question. Now this study typically doesn't go directly down to bus stops. So in my experience as consultant world, you usually know where you're going here. You talk about times. Usually there's a next step that we're like, okay, on this bus route, we have 30 stops inbound, 30 stops out. Should it be 28? Should it be 37? And based on you look at your boarding counts along that route, if we're not picking up anybody, or if you're having a lot of time delays where we're having to make a stop every other block, there's probably some changes, but usually that would be like the next step to the study. If that, does that kind of make sense? Like where you go? Is there a particular area that you were looking at, like four stops?
No, I was just curious how we know where along this there will be stops. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, good. And many, how many bus stops do you have, Shane? How many do we have here? Oh, just about 435, by the way. So in that mix of 435, the more you grow, when you just make service more frequent, you probably aren't adding and subtracting, but the minute you add those other routes, then Shannon's number will go above that.
The only thing I'd add to that is I tell a lot of people, we get requests for additional stops, and I tell a lot of people, we don't control where the state decides to put some government agency that people want to get to with the bus, where, I'll give you a great example, Boone Hospital built the clinic there west of Providence. They don't talk to us about that. And so when we understand why there's people that want to go there, but fitting that in dramatically changes headways, and that affects the entire system. And so we have a list of places we would love to go. It's a matter of being able to expand service basically to the other side of Providence when I'm talking about the Boone Hospital Clinic and how that affects the rest of the system. So we've got a list of places we'd like to go. And so when we expand to tier three in this case, you know, those kind of things become an option. But then it's also, where's a safe place to stop? Where's, you know, where can we collect the most people in one spot, you know, to keep things moving? So.
And Councilwoman, should I tell Shane that you're happy to sit on his committee when he does his bus stop location study?
The more the merrier.
The more the merrier, yeah. But truly, bus stops are so important to infrastructure for our people to get to their stop safely, and making sure that's considered where those locations are. Are they far side, near side? Next step to come. Yep. Any other questions, you guys, about tier three? Do we need to stand up and stretch so I don't lose any? But we're on 25 of 40. Okay, we're going here. Good. Thanks for hanging in there, you guys. So tier four, this is our vision that what we heard from your community, from our residents, this is where they want to be. This is their vision. They say, I have this in other communities. Why can't we have it here? This goes from baseline. We have many hours. As you can see, we start at 5 in the morning on weekdays. We go till midnight. Saturday, we run from 6 a.m. to midnight. Sunday, we run from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. You imagine? Anywhere, anytime. I gotta love it. How many buses? Look how many buses. Oh, sorry, on Mondays. Frequencies, you have 15-minute service. Bring it on. I can go anywhere. Don't need 30-minute in the evening. In the evening time, you have 30-minute service and 60-minute afterward. Saturday, 30-minute service and 60 in the evening. And Sunday, headway, 60 minutes. You've got over 20 buses out there. You know, again, today we're running 6. So you can imagine buses are everywhere in this community, which is where we want to go. Saturday, we have 13. I'm missing some buses here on Sunday. I apologize, you guys. We should have 13 buses here on Sunday. Now, we are over 100,000 service hours. And again, remember, our baseline is 20. So we're 5 times what we're doing today. This is achievable because of the champions in this room, you guys. It takes money. But our community wants to see this type of service, and we've got to find a way to get there. That's the main thing. It's a lot, it's expensive, but we can connect anybody almost 24 hours a day, which is pretty amazing. Your map is serving different areas. You have microtransit service with this option too. So you see on this map, there are some dotted lines where you would have zones of microtransit. And microtransit is kind of the Uber and Lyft of today's service, that it's really great in some areas. It has limited capacities, again, because of the vehicle sizes. So you just have to make sure we're running it very efficiently. But the tier four is an amazing service, and you know, certainly a goal for the Como staff and for the PTAC and for y'all here, you know, sitting on council. So questions on four? Get there, Kareem. What you doing? You know, you gotta get there. Microtransit, you guys, I talked just a little bit about this one, and the map is on this backside. I won't read all of these to you, but the main part, you guys can see in the southeast section of town, there's a zone that is east of Providence, and there's a zone that's west of Providence. What's our road down here on the south? I can't remember that we go towards for the zone. I should have brought my other map.
Rolling Hills.
Yes.
New Haven.
Yes, the Rolling Hills neighborhood. But you can see the zone goes, and the same on this side. So extensive service. It is recommended for microtransit because of the cost. You don't want a fixed route bus running out there empty. We can do better than that, and so we want to make sure we have the right size bus out there, vehicle out there, and the right service level out there.
Karen, before you go on to talk more about microtransit, can you? I was just noting down. Oh, and then it totally blanked my mind because I got all excited about microtransit. Oh, I know. It's about the evening end times, like for the dream tier, right? You know, as we get into longer discussions about partnerships with some of our community stakeholders, especially maybe universities, I know in the report you made mention to, but I don't think there's a slide on the conversations about the late night potentials. Do you want to just touch on the relationship between whether or not our transit system, or if we just rely on private, you know, Stripes and Ubers and Lyfts to provide that, you know, after midnight potential?
There's no wrong answer. There are transit agencies that provide the tipsy taxi from midnight till 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. You know, I think there was a consensus here that we would stop and we potentially have partners that would pick up that after hour, which you guys will need when you get to this level. You'll have to look out, and if there aren't any partners stepping forward, should we go till 3 a.m.? Probably so, you know, to do that. But even though they're not partnering to do it, would they help you pay for it?
Okay, that's my answer.
I think so too. Yeah. Now it's a liability, and poor Shane's going to have to get some drivers that want to work at 2 in the morning, and you know, there's lots of challenges. But some people want that too.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, as you showed on one of the first slides, as our population growth continues at like 1.5-2%, there's going to come a time where it's not just college students, it's also just the vibrancy of being a city that we're going to need some sort of night bus or potential. Mm-hmm. So just planning for that think about before we all of a sudden have to do something.
100%. And that service from, you know, 11 a.m. till 5:30 will be your least efficient service ever.
Yeah.
You know, that's what
that's
you see.
That's when we're least efficient too. So yeah.
But you say if we can get people home from work at 2 in the morning because they worked at, we can get someone drunk off the road. We save lives. And there's a lot of quality of life benefits that may not measure a metric that many agencies have chosen to be part of that quality of life. But they usually have, like if there's a downtown business district where you have most, they contribute and help fund that service. So potentials as you go, but I think the consensus here with the Midnight is we do think there's some partnerships that would be able to. As you guys get closer to that, that needs to step forward. And if you don't see it, you as an agency and council need to decide, should we go late or should we not?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm also looking at employment growth and changes in development, especially as I'm looking at that blue line, keeping track of, I guess, recent progress on developments and recent headlines. We have new employers in that area. We have a couple medium to large employers and university expanding into that area and or potentially selling in that area. I do expect that to be a location where people will need to be getting to and from. I also wonder, as there is a site that's likely to be developed in the near future by the university, is that something that we can partner with them as we do campus shuttles and shuttles to other university health locations? Can they help us break into this kind of tier?
I think it's a great opportunity. And you see that in other communities, if they're willing to look at that option. If they're willing to, you know, partner like their other Tiger Line routes, if they have one going out there, that doesn't have to just be student-based, that can be open to the general public, and that certainly would be what, you know, you all would want to encourage them.
Yeah, they will have employees who use the stop at Reactor Drive, Reactor parking lot, that's a Tiger Line, who will be employed both at that location and the Discovery Drive location at one day.
When will that happen? Do you know, like, when do they break ground?
The timeline is
fluid.
Fluid. It has. Fluid. It was supposed to be 4 years, 10 years ago.
To be determined. Yes.
They are talking about it much, much more lately, is all I can say.
Yeah, that's great. Again, an opportunity for us, an open door to have discussions. If they're not, we understand, but we would keep knocking at the door. I'm sure that's what we do. We're in the transportation business, you know. Yeah.
I certainly think once ground is broken on that and there are other developments that are breaking ground.
I think some of it depends on what tier we're on. Mm-hmm. When that's happening. So how easy is that to connect to that and use that? And so timing, if it worked out, that'd be great. It's just a matter of where we are compared to what they're doing exactly, because I don't know exactly what they're doing and how interested they are. At the end of this, it's something we'll put in our council report. We're doing more for the university than we've done in the past because they're changing. And I'm sure you know this quite well. How they're handling parking on their campus and how they want to move faculty and staff, you know, around. And so that puts a burden on us too, but it's also our only revenue source. So that's part of what I want to cover in our, you know, preferably cover in our council report. If we have an opportunity tonight, we're happy to talk about that.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. And our service with the existing Tiger Lines, what they give us is mostly funding, or do they?
Students.
And students and
ridership.
Yeah. Okay.
Anybody else? Oh, yes.
I'm wondering if you have specific recommendations, maybe throughout these tiers, maybe regardless of the tiers, you've talked a lot about the infrastructure at the bus stops themselves. And so, like, looking at this map, which is an ideal map, I'm seeing it kind of traces the outline of Ward 2 and doesn't go a ton into it. And I understand why. I understand why those neighborhoods might not become bus stops. And I'm picturing specific houses, specific people I've talked to who couldn't walk to the bus stop, certainly don't want to, can't bike all the way to their job on the other side of town, but could bike to the bus stop, and potentially if there were infrastructure, they would rather leave their bike there than have to take it off at the transit station and put it back on and take it off at work. So I'm wondering if you have recommendations for what the bus stop infrastructure should actually look like.
We don't in this particular one. And the other thing I think is really valuable is word to your area too, yeah. So you know it well. And for all of you that know your neighborhood way better than anyone else here, these routes are as good as a little computer that drew them. When you guys get to tier 2, 3, and 4, you'll want to relook at these and make sure that this is exactly where they should go. At that time, they will be looking to identify the stops too. And it is a very simple thing to add a bike station, a bike locker, if we have a neighborhood request. It does cost money. You know, they cost about $12,000. There's some cheaper ones, but you don't want your bike stolen. So, you know, do those. We would just need to have a little more right of way if that was going to happen. But if you had a community coming to you as a council, you know, councilwoman, you can say, we can talk to transit. Do we have funding for that? You know, I don't know if we do or don't, but it would be worth it at that time to talk about that so your people could know, you know, from your specific ward.
Yep. I'm going to talk about fancy options now because I did my postdoc research in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we in that area had 3 private companies that ran bike lockers and bike stations near each of the bus stations. One of them partnered directly with the city. 2 of them just rented storefronts nearby, to my knowledge. We have a lot, we have a fairly active cyclist community. We have very entrepreneuring cyclists and 3 major bike shops. I'm wondering how we can build into those partnerships, and maybe there is a way to have a public-private partnership or encourage someone to fill that space.
We're going to get too far down in the weeds probably.
Yeah, sure.
But with the way we handle, historically have handled bus shelters and things like that, they're what I often refer to as a reverse right of use, meaning we're getting permission to put it on somebody else's property. Mm-hmm. And so we typically don't go and purchase right away. You could do it that way, but we have not done it that way. A lot of times it's in a commercial area. The idea is, you know, you want that patronage, so therefore you'll allow us to put that there. Sometimes that backfires on us a little bit. Sometimes people decide they don't want that there anymore. And so we have money currently for additional amenities at bus stops. It can be difficult to find willing partners to do that, and past councils haven't liked the idea, and I understand why, of forcing that issue, you know, condemning to get that space or something like that, or, you know, the ability to get that additional right-of-way to provide that off of the right-of-way where it needs to be. And so when we get into that, that's really getting down the weeds, but that's a different conversation, I think, for a different time.
And I'll just make a note to do make sure we don't get too far down the weeds, because at our point, we're at an hour.
Yep.
So, and you're thankfully, you're just over halfway here. No, it's a good point. But I think for some of these that maybe bring up, put it, make sure we note it down, like put a pin in it for us to continue. So.
All right. Any more questions, you guys, before we go on? Okay, so recommendation summary. You're like, oh my, this slide is a busy slide for those interested. It provides an opportunity for you to look from baseline to tier 4. We just went through all the details. There are several charts here on the right-hand side that show the hours of service of where you would start and then at baseline and where you would finish with a tier 4. And obviously the big difference that you'll see on those charts are the baseline tier one and tier two, there are zero colors on Sunday because we were not operating on Sunday. When you get into tier three and four, Sunday service is there, and each color represents a different frequency. So whether we move from a frequency of 60 minutes to 30 minutes is what this is summarizing. Again, the tier four that we just talked about, you have service basically from early morning till midnight or 10 o'clock every day of the week, so 7 days a week. Life doesn't stop at 5 o'clock on Friday for our community. And we have over 20 buses that are operating, you know, during weekday service during peak time for our tier four. So again, just a summary, and this is one that the Como team and the staff, they really look forward that when they can show their drivers, they can show their passengers, you guys, this is what we're fighting for every day. This is why we need you, and this is where we're headed. So it's a really good just summary to have on hand. Okay, we're gonna move into regional service options. We were already there, but we're gonna talk about this particular one that is operating or will be operating from Columbia to Jefferson City. They have stops at the airport and in Ashland. And this section, Federal Transit Administration, section 5311F, this very long-winded program name, it is intercity bus service, so you do have to align with Greyhound that operates. You also need to make a stop in a rural area, which is why Ashland is purposely shown with a stop. And we just put together some, you know, these are tentative stops that you'd have early morning departures from Columbia. They would get to Jefferson City. You know, it takes an hour to get down there, and we had to stop in Ashland in the middle. We'd stop at the airport in Jeff City, and then we'd go to the state building, and then that service would come north again back to Columbia with morning service and afternoon. These are not published. These are absolutely just giving a person an idea of what that service could look like. With this particular service, it's just over $600,000 for six trips each weekday. This does not include weekend service. So again, when Shane gets an email to sit on the intercity bus route study committee, here's some pre-work for that committee. They're going to do a statewide study, so they won't be just looking at this corridor. They'll look across the state from St. Louis to Columbia, from Columbia to KC, and even in the southern portions of the state. But you, Shane has at his fingertips to take, hey, here's some preliminary work. This is what we heard from our community, and here are some estimates for a bus route. So we did look at that regional service. This is the only one we went into detail about, but we do have that option. If Como wanted to have this regional service, you guys can see the operating dollars that are here. The ridership is an unknown on this one, but we do know there's a demand for it because we've heard it for over 10 years in our community. Questions about this one?
I'll just say that I think from looking at other cities and like when we visited Madison a few years ago, one of the conversations they had is that, especially because in Madison, in Wisconsin, they're not allowed to do regional transit authorities. So I think, is it correct that probably the way that they handle that is they have like an MOU with that city that is also receiving? So like Jefferson City might have an MOU with us and they might give us some funding to provide.
Very common to see those, and whether they do an MOU or a contract, whatever they decide, but there's a governmental agreement to extend that service.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. Any other questions about this one? Okay.
I guess actually just one really quick question. Based on all the other dollar amounts you've thrown out that, like, is that, that's just the operating cost for like people. Like that's not actually for the cost of like equipment and, or is it?
Six trips a day, no vehicle included.
Okay, that's right. I was like, let's do this, Shane, do. But then I was like, wait, I bet there's another cost in there you're not including.
Just one more bus in the backyard. Yeah.
Some more drivers.
Yeah.
And a driver, by the way.
Yeah, or two. The cost to do it, not, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But like you say, doable, it just takes those pieces. Yeah. And is that our highest priority for our community,
right,
you know, those? Okay, we're moving to implementation, guys. So this is where we do talk costs, and there are many tables on these slides. So we've talked a lot about those because our vehicle revenue hours are our buses that operate on the road every day. The baseline is 20,000 revenue vehicle hours per year. We are trying to get to 107,000. And you can see the percentage of the change just from baseline to tier one is about a 20%. Then you have almost a doubling to 94%. Tier three is 145%, and tier four is 80%. Then to our mayor's particular I spy of the dollars. Again, this is solely operating dollars. This is not capital equipment. So fixed route, 2.5 million, paratransit, just under 2 million. So our baseline service every year is right about 4.5 million. And you guys have seen those numbers with your budget talks, plus or minus. Our tier one moves us to just under 6 million, 5.8 million for operations. Tier two moves that to $8.5 million. And then tier three, $11.7 million. And tier four, we're just under $20 million annually to operate the service. So we are at $5 million today, and I'm doing ballpark numbers, and we're going to $20 million just for operations. Questions on that?
Is tier four the percentage missing a number?
It's going from one to the next, three to four.
I think
right.
From three to four.
The others seem to go from baseline to the tier.
I think it's going from the 59 hours to the 107, and that would be about an 81%. Yes, good check on the numbers here. Questions about the numbers, anyone?
If that's the case, then I think the percentage from tier two to tier three is all, because you're only adding 20,000, but you're only 145%.
I think that would be true for tier one to tier two. I think maybe tier four, we had different math formula than the other
tiers. The other three. Thank you guys for catching that. I'm sorry that those are off. I will get them changed. Yes. All right, noted. Okay, then we're moving over to capital costs. So again, we talked about how much it is to buy a bus. And peak vehicles, if you guys remember, we were talking about with our baseline. We have six buses out on the road when we're at baseline. We'll have over 20 when we get to tier four. That does not include the paratransit vehicles, so we add those in there. And do we have, what's our total fleet today? 25 total, including paratransit, didn't you? 39, including paratransit. So we have 18 peak vehicles, and we have over 35 vehicles on the lot. So the dollars on the right-hand side are the replacements or additional buses that we would have to purchase if we're expanding service. And that can be bus stops, because a bus stop ranges for an intersection, you can put in bus stops for about $10,000 or $12,000. That's if you had to put in curbs and shelters and landing pads. If we have to build facilities to park our buses under or within, those costs are also included in this particular, or if we have to expand. So in tier one, we have about 100,000. Tier two, again, remembering that we're adding significant hours, just over 8 million. Another 10 million on tier three, and tier four, 22 million. And again, we went from six base vehicles to over 20. So it is a lot, but we've got to have buses to provide the service out there. questions on that? And that detail is within the report. You guys, I apologize that this is just a summary table, but we didn't want to go into a million details. Questions? Okay, I'm going to keep going then. So funding options, all this is like, how do we get the dollars to make our first step and to keep going forward? Today we received $5,307. Those are from the Federal Transit Administration. There's an opportunity. Do we get 5310? We do receive it today too. So we maximize the federal transit programs to the extent that we can. As Shane just asked, or one of the council persons had just asked, what do we get from the university? And we said ridership, because our allocation is based on our ridership numbers and our population. So that does make a big difference to us. 5311 are rural monies that if we provide services outside this urbanized area, we are eligible for these $5,311 dollars. So if we do coordinate in the future with Boone County, we do want to have those conversations and that pocket of monies in those conversations. There are competitive grants that are available. There's the RAISE, there's the BUILD grants. They are highly competitive because you're going against every transit agency across the United States, from, you just mentioned San Francisco, so from BART to Washington, D.C. Metro. We have good numbers here. We have great opportunities. You do have an aggressive, I'd say, legislative body, because that does make a difference in Washington when you're going after these grants. You also, you know, wanting to just know your senators so that they know and can fight for these dollars when we go to Washington after these competitive ones, making sure we keep them in the loop if we go after those. Again, the chances of those, I think you never depend on them. They're a nice surprise. And you can, the best part is that Como can have plans like this that are out there. If there's an opportunity that comes in, they reference these grants. They want to say, did your council approve this? What page is it on? And that's how picky they are when you fill out these competitive grants. So from the federal level, those are the primary funding sources that we know of. Sometimes there's some surprise funding out of the Department of Agriculture, some there from the housing and urban development side. Some of those come with a lot of ties. So if you're going to go after a bus route, they might fund it for 2 years. Well, what happens in 2 years? You know, so making sure we know that before we walk into those grant opportunities, because the worst thing is to take those services away once they've been out there. The next opportunity are state funding. So the state transportation fund and the general revenue dollars that we have received for many years. Unfortunately, they were almost cut in half this past fiscal year. After the previous 2 years, they have been almost doubled. So I do think you guys will eventually go back. I think there's pressures across the state to make those monies. We have zero control of that, though. This council is one of the largest councils, along with Jefferson City. You guys make a difference, you know, at the state offices. So paying attention to that, stay good friends, and say, hey, that impacted my community. You know, making sure they know that.
It's in our legislative priorities. That was one of the ones that we passed. Do we have any sort of metrics on the impact to us that we can make sure we have for any sort of talking points or letters we need to send?
I don't have anything at my fingertips, so we can put something together.
Yeah, they're not in session yet. I don't need it yet. I just mean, that's the sort of thing that we can, okay, great.
Sure.
But when they hear from voters, when they hear from other council, and again, you guys are one of the strongest ones in the state of Missouri. You know, Jefferson City makes a difference, but you guys do too, and then St. Louis and KC. So top five.
Can you say that more often?
Oh, yes.
Sometimes it feels like opposite.
Maybe it does, but it's true. You know, you guys are top five in the state, and you know, that's why you do make a difference. It's amazing. But keep playing those cards, because eventually dollars will trickle. It doesn't happen overnight, but if you can get a few more dollars in, then it goes to our people here. So Thank you for keeping fighting. That's a good thing. Then we talk local dollars, because this is always the hard one. Who's coughing it up? How are we going to come up with the funding? Our absent transportation sales tax that we have. Do we try to do a new dedicated tax? Do we have a bond coming up that we want to put transit in? I don't know how often council has talked about that or not talked about it. That's certainly what is done in other communities to support transit. But it's hard. You have to have champions in the community, and you have to have a tough skin. That would just be how that goes. There are districts that can be created, as you guys know. There's also private funding. There are transportation management associations that can be built. And then also, we already talked about the partnership with the university. Again, we want to keep enhancing that and making sure that we have great relationships with them. So, questions about the funding side? I hear rumble on the other side of the table. What's going on?
One of the rumble means a question. Well, there's nothing here about fares and reintroducing fares. That's a question in the community, so I wonder about that. What that might look like.
I'll ask my council members, what does that look like? Yes. You have them before.
Mm-hmm. Well, in our most recent conversation, we talked about how we really couldn't, even if we chose to, we couldn't implement it right now because we don't have the equipment on the buses. I'm just looking for a basic bottom line idea, the impact that a fare would make. Mm-hmm. There are costs to fares too. So mm-hmm. I'm just wondering what that might look like.
We can pull something like that together. Not only the cost to the infrastructure of your fare box, but you also have to have staff to reconcile that back at the offices. So that's an employee hire too. But we can look at that. The impact on ridership is for every 1% that you raise fares, you'll have a 3% drop in ridership. And that's just a national rule of thumb that is used. And again, you all have to decide if that's the future of that. It is a revenue source. I don't know of a transit agency that I've worked in 30 years that has fare revenues over 10%. Of your, but you have a $5 million budget, 10% of that does make it, you know, it chips it off. Is it your answer to the future of going to that? Yeah. So you guys have to decide that, listen to your community, but certainly you can run the numbers on the estimates of what that would do for ridership.
Well, we have had fares previously, so I assume that we can go back and look and see what the mm-hmm. what impact that has. That sounds yeah. probably going to carry it forward if we read it. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Taught a very sensitive topic, mm-hmm. many communities looking at too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can say that I've heard from most of our transportation advocates asking for fares to remain free. I wondered also on the subject of employee recruitment and retention and onboarding. I remember hearing from the unions a while back about the CPAP machines and the cost of those following sleep studies during onboarding being a significant burden to employment. Were we able to reimburse or defray those costs?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know. I know we talked about that a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Carl, do you remember? I know like there was an HR component to that.
Yeah, I think the
minding your own business
in the back. And as a quick, just a note on this, how many more slides do you have? You have 10 more? Okay. I'm keeping an eye on our time.
I can talk fast or not.
It may be easier for me to get something from Kathy to kind of report out. I know there's different avenues. So part of it is once they become an employee, then there is part of our benefits that will offer that. Is that section of it or not? But I can get something from Kathy to kind of give a little bit more detail to it.
Thank you.
because I can't talk about it.
I think your next slide is on staffing.
Staffing, yes. And I will move ahead if no other questions. Okay. So these next slides, you guys, are different parts of the implementation piece. And when we started this study over a year and a half ago, looking at the future of the administration for HOMO was a critical piece, because when you start young and you start to grow and you don't change your administration, you don't change your training, people start wearing 10 hats, there's burnout, and you're going to miss something. And that's just the reality of life at a transit agency. So making sure that when we were tasked with looking at a typical transit agency that runs 6 vehicles, 12 vehicles, 20 vehicles, we looked at the recommendations on what that should be for HOMO. There's not a wrong answer, again, for how much you have, but the goal is having the safest system you have, making sure when we get a triennial audit, our procurement is up to peace and that our revenues are never in jeopardy of being taken away because we missed something because we didn't have enough staff to do that. So there is a table on this slide that talks about our existing services, and there's the chart on the left-hand side that talks about your existing org, and then what we are recommending on the right-hand side. The baseline, there's not actually a large change in the admin staff until you get to tier 4. Then, except for your drivers, you're always going to have more drivers the more buses you put out on the road. So today, one director, 4 management and superintendents, 5 supervisors, finance, safety, and trainer, and 52 staff, dispatchers, and drivers. So that's a total of 62 staff to run the baseline service. Now we are growing that at tier 1 to 65, so you're only adding 3 more drivers, no management, to tier 1. Now, tier 2 was where we had a big jump in the revenue hours. So the biggest growth you're going to see is your number of drivers and dispatchers, where we bumped to 80 staff that are checking in and out every day. Tier 3, again, and tier 4 are incremental growth positions. The supervisors, finance, safety, and trainer, in tier 3, we had 1. So we haven't changed admin staff from baseline all the way to tier 3, except for 1 staff. Then tier 4 is where we have the major service, 7 days a week, almost 24/7 service, where you then have 1 public works director, 7 superintendents or supervisory level, and then you have supervisor, finance, safety, and trainer that bumps to 10 administrative folk, and then 165 drivers. So can you imagine the office? And the buzz around the office when we get to that level. Are there questions about that particular structure? Are there questions about the staff numbers of where those came from?
Don't let us get into the weeds like this.
And don't let you get in the weeds.
Yeah, keep going.
It is in the. It is.
I don't know how many drivers Shane needs, but Shane, tell me. Yeah. Sorry.
It's very true. That's why he's good at what he does.
Right.
But again, even from when we were working with the HOMO staff early on, our Olson team actually had a few more administrative people before tier 3, because you do have, I won't say a skeleton, but you don't have a lot of cushion in the administrative positions with HOMO. We're comfortable with this one for sure. From the management and superintendent, we had 1 more person in tier 2, but they were very comfortable with where it is, so that's what we ended up recommending. So, okay, then I'll go ahead and move on, you guys. So system integration and development, and this goes back to much of the conversation that is a little bit out of our control. But when we are moving towards a tier 4 structure where we have frequent service in our community, if we don't align our policies for land use and development And Shane, you gave the perfect example of the clinic that happened to be located on the other side of the road, which is always what happens. When we choose those, it is very hard for transit to adjust to that and to still be efficient. So when we do the update to our comprehensive plan for the city, looking at the high capacity corridors that are in the transit plan, our zoning and land use should line up to those. That's what we would expect to see from the planning staff. If there's questions, it may not line up perfectly, but it should be in the same vicinity. Transit-oriented development, so having mixed use along those high-capacity corridors is also very important so that we can have people living and working in the same locations. Transit cannot control that, but we can certainly advocate for it. And so when we do the update to the zoning and we look at setbacks and we look at, you know, what do we have? Is it agricultural? Do we have single-use housing? All of that needs to be looked at. And so we have simple recommendations to make sure that when the city staff goes to those next levels, that they please look at that for transit and get transit involved and put on the committees. Any questions about that? Okay. Sorry, Shane, I can't get the table here. So when does all this happen? What's gonna go on? So the updated, this is a different table that was in the adopted plan because you guys have already adopted all of this information that we talked about, but this is an updated timeline about what we're actually doing today. So we finalized a study in this next quarter, pursue local funding commitments. So in 2026, for us to move forward, we have to come up with more funding. And so we have shown, you know, it's going to take a year to talk about that, to make something happen and see what we're able to do in that first year. Continue to procure vehicles as we need them. The Como staff has a vehicle replacement plan that looks really great, and they should continue to do that. As funding is received, those vehicles for expanded service will be incorporated into those. So then there's a draft schedule. You've got to go out to the community, make sure our staff that we, the org chart that we're recommending is approved by council, so that can happen as soon. Usually that happens at the start of a fiscal year, so whenever it's appropriate for that to transition, we would recommend. With the new services, you do have to do a Title VI plan, that's a federal requirement. Then you look at scheduling drivers and the rest of this falls in place. If we do get the funding for this tier one, everybody see that go live in 2027. You ready for that, Shane? Michael, come to the party. Shannon's gonna be, if all stars aligned and we could get the funding and the staff, that would happen in mid 2027, third quarter. Yes, sir.
And this would take us to the baseline?
That would take you, hopefully we're already
tier
at
tier one.
Tier one.
Okay.
Yep. So when we talk about the funding for transit, it would be meet where you are today to baseline to the tier one. It would be both of those. Okay. Questions on that? Yes, ma'am.
In order to have tier one by that go live date, when do we need to have baseline in place?
Tomorrow?
No. That's us.
Sorry,
yesterday?
Tomorrow. Mike said yesterday. Okay, Mike. And I say that jokingly, but I'm not joking at the same time, that we have to have the drivers. We can't get the buses. If we have the drivers, we can get the buses, then we'll go for that additional funding. Yeah. So it doesn't, what do they say? You don't let up on the gas today of continuing to bring eligible drivers in. Okay, so you all have adopted that plan. Now when we presented to you all probably 6 months ago or 5 months ago, you had asked us to look at several additional pieces, and some of that we've already talked about, but we have some summary slides to make sure that we go over this new information. So a peer review, particularly looking at funding. And so when we talked about the peer review and the report, we contacted the same universities to talk about specifics of where their funding came from. And state funding, you know, several of ours were Illinois, Indiana, Georgia, Iowa, Kansas, Indiana, Oklahoma, Alabama, and Kansas again. Unfortunately, the state funding in Columbia is definitely a setback based on other peer communities. That's not new news to you all. We keep promoting, we keep contacting our legislature to make sure they know that that does impact us and the amount of service that we can provide. Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, their state funding for transit is at a very high level. The first bullet says, it's over 50% of the agency's budget. So could you imagine if we could have 50% for our budget? It's a game changer. Indiana, they have about 25% of their entire budget as state funding. We are 1%. So this peer information is available for you, but again, the more we can promote to our legislatures that it does impact our community, the better it is for us. Questions on that piece?
It looks like we are contributing a little bit less local funding. Is that something we need to be able to grow? And I take it that would have to come from tax increase.
This famous slide of the local, yes. We talked about it with the existing half cent or bond partnerships. Yeah, you know, something. Mm-hmm. What happens in many communities, if there is a transportation initiative that includes roads, bridges, bike paths, transit needs to be included in that. It needs to have operations and a certain percentage of whatever, a 10-year bond or a 20-year. We can't forget about transit because that helps the general fund where it's you're not coming back every year fighting against fire and police and libraries. They're very great services. But if we can have a tax bond for transit that's dedicated to public transportation, that's an opportunity that takes some pressure off of the annual general funds from the city's coffers.
Betsy, you have a question?
I just have more of a comment, just that bonds need to be repaid. Mm-hmm. And so my understanding is in Columbia, we generally do that with our enterprise funds. Mm-hmm. Because they are repayable and transit already is a problem. So I would just want to look into how you could do that bonding and make sure that we don't renege on paying it back.
Mm-hmm. Yep, great comment. And every community does it different. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're right. But I'm just seeing successful communities that have had that structure in place. They have been able to have relief off of the general funds because there was a dedicated source for funding.
Yeah, but if it's just bonds, it's not dedicated.
It may be an increment finance. Yeah, there's different ways.
Well, questions for another time.
There you go, more to go.
I don't want to get in trouble with the mayor here, you know.
okay, peer reviews again. You all had asked us to look at what other transit agencies in Missouri do about funding. So St. Louis, they have an operating budget that's primarily from the sales tax. That comes from City of St. Louis, St. Louis County, and then St. Clair County. They have state and federal funds, and their base fare is a buck. St. Joe, Missouri, St. Joseph Transit, core funding comes from FTA, just like it does here, 5307 and 11. There is a local match from their general fund. They do also receive the FTA 5310 monies for elderly and disabled, and their base fare is $1 too. Cape Girardeau, they have a county transit authority. Half of their budget is from FTA grants, so they receive 5311 monies. They do have a recent partnership with the college, but they didn't have the exact funding breakdown of that. Now their transit service is just like yours, it's free in Cape Girardeau. Then we also looked at peer examples for microtransit service, since that was one of the interests from council. Norman, Oklahoma, their microtransit operates from 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. And as y'all know, there's a university there. $2, it's free for students. They book trips only through the app, or they can call. I believe the call, they said it had to be booked by a certain hour. I think it might have been midnight was the last time they could call in for the ride. Otherwise, it had to be on the app. And they do share rides. So if there's one car, you might have two other people sitting in with you. It's just how they are able to maximize the service. Lawrence,
sorry, they, really quick clarifying on that one. Is it free for OU students because OU is paying?
They are contributing to the funding, correct. Lawrence, Transit On Demand, you can schedule those up to 5 days. They do operate overnight, so 24/7 and on Sunday, 7 days a week. Microtransit in Bloomington, the Blink Microtransit. They have three different zones. They provide late night service till 3 a.m., $2 per trip, and they have a partnership with Uber and Lyft there. So they that would be a different mechanism than is operated in Lawrence. Champaign-Urbana, again, they have this West Connect and Northeast. With designated zones, Monday through Friday only, and they stop at 6:30 p.m. There's not an evening service, and it's $1 for that. They also have a partnership with the university for that one.
Question.
Yes.
With the microtransit, and particularly the Bloomington one, where I'm seeing that's operated by Uber and Lyft, what if anything are they doing to ensure that these vehicles are accessible? I know in Columbia we have a real lack of Uber and Lyft drivers with accessible vehicles.
I don't know this exactly, but I know the only way that they could have the contract with the transit agency is they must have one accessible vehicle available so that they can provide that service. So when they book a trip, if they need to have that accessible vehicle, they will either go transfer vehicles or they have somebody staged in that vehicle. Yep, in Bloomington.
So that's one vehicle available at all times that this service is offered, not just one vehicle in the city of Columbia.
No, it would be when it's offered. Yep, correct. Yep. Anybody else? Okay. Then the other peer review is we wanted to look at other, or you all wanted us to look at other university partnerships. So we looked at KU over in Lawrence. They fund two campus routes. They have the city service and then KU. Both entities are separately funded and governed. Route planning is made by each one of the agencies, and they have a an MOU. Actually, I think they have an IGA, intergovernmental agreement, versus an MOU, but they're very similar, you know, legally. Since 2009, the city and KU have selected a third party to operate that service, even though it's funded from the different entities. So they put out a bid, a private company bids on those, and that's how that one is funded. In Champaign-Urbana, where University of Illinois is, 1989, okay, that's back in my day, they have a three-year agreement in place today that's just over $20 million for the 3 years. They fund seven campus routes and then the after-hours SafeRide program, so that'd be the tipsy taxi. The goal of that partnership with the city and the university is provide evening options for students and avoid building parking garages in the community. 80% of that ridership are university students or staff.
Do we have an idea of how much the university provides in funding for each of these?
They did not tell us, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which that is their prerogative. We did ask for them.
How often do we get to negotiate with the university?
Annually.
Thanks.
Other universities in Manhattan, Kansas, where Kansas State is, since 2009, so just about 15 years, They have a public transit board where the city, county, and K-State sit on that board for planning and for the management. 51% of the fixed route ridership are K-State students or staff. They do have an IGA, interlocal governmental agreement between the city, the county, and K-State to coordinate and secure the federal funding. So the agency, Attabus, the Flint Hills Area Transit Authority is their long name. They would go after grants, but they would have signatures from all three partners to go after different grants. And then K-State does contribute to the local match for federal funding. Not completely though, but they did not disclose the amount, which was not surprising. In Bloomington, Indiana University is there. They have 6 bus routes that serve the campus area. 3 routes are funded by the university, approximately $1.3 million a year. Students, staff, and faculty ride for free. Both entities coordinate regular and monitor the performance of the system at their meetings. IU operates their own transit system of the 6 routes, so we talk about. Okay, then we're gonna switch gears to peer county partnerships like with communities. So just north of us in Iowa City, there's a partnership between the transit agency and the county program, which is called SEATS out of Johnson County, for operating only the paratransit service. Iowa City Transit provides the vehicles, so they don't have the, Johnson County does not have to buy the or purchase the vehicles. They just use the city-owned vehicles. And the funding comes from the local communities and then Iowa City Transit for the county transit service. In Manhattan and Junction City, that's where K-State is, the ATA bus has an IGA with the local towns and the county to operate the fixed route and on-demand services outside the urban area. In 2023, they received $145,000 from the local counties for local match. That's what they would have used that for. The board consists of representatives from the towns and the counties vote if they want to go after the FTA funding for the bus, and usually they do. And then the last one for county partnerships, Raleigh-Durham, 2025, they provided $4 million to Go Triangle for countywide services. There is a Go Triangle board that consists of representatives from the cities and the counties. Any questions about that? Okay. This is a little bit repetitive of what we talked previously about. How do we retain drivers? How do we recruit drivers? And why, the perfect question, why is there a driver shortage? I should have gotten your slide, Shane. Aging workforce, just as Mike had talked earlier. Mike, you said your average age of driver, 47.
Oh, that's national.
National, yes. Competitive job market, our drivers can get the same as if they work at a Walmart or a grocery store. And how do we get them to come over to transit? Regulations, the biggest one that we didn't hit on earlier are drug and alcohol testing. They're random. Everyone has to do it if you're a driver. You do criminal background checks, CDL requirements. We talked about that. So there are regulations that must be followed for us to receive our Federal Transit Administration funding. Best practices that we've seen across the country, increase the pay, provide benefits, a package where you can do performance-based bonuses, tuition assistance. Do we have a clear policy about every year you get an increase? You know, is that in place today? If they refer somebody, do we get a $500 bonus? You know, if they stay for 6 months or a year, that's what we're seeing across the country as some of the incentives. Improving worker schedules. Who loves a split shift? Nobody. So can we try and give them better shifts to keep them so that we can keep them, you know, 10 years instead of 2 years? positive work environment? Do we have mentors? Do we do positive encouragement for reportings? Clear path to promotions, so people don't have to guess if they're going to have a promotion to a supervisor or a lead driver or a trainer. Ongoing training, train your people. Make sure we train them so they know. More effective hiring, modifying an application so that we can help younger people or older people fill out the application easier. Recruiting practices, employee referrals and social media. Are we out online? We should be if we're not. And I do know when we presented at the PTAC meeting, one of the PTAC members had said, hey, do we have applications down at the transit station? And we typically, everyone comes here. And so we were going to check on, can we make that happen? Can we put a QR code that's down there that it makes it easy for someone to apply? It's a good idea. Yeah, if we can do that. Thoughts on this one?
I think our one question is just like, is staff considering all, you know, I mean, I assume sure. You're considering all of these and just, yeah, letting council know what support you need from us, similar to the city manager. Yeah,
thank you. Yeah, for that, and working with the HR department.
Yep.
Yeah, which is good. Okay, you guys, we're talking a little bit about the famous purple route. We've looked at that, the tier two alternative. We did look at that option. We looked at how much would it cost. How could we fund that one? We talked about this Transportation Management Association. That's actually a legal association that can be formed by businesses and community members to fund transit. Each of those entities would help come up with dollars to help support either a local match or the full service. We talked to the chamber representatives about that. We talked to the businesses when we went out there. Again, we did survey the folk that were there too, and they, I think they were very interested. Their follow-up was not interested. So I think there's opportunities there. I think it's, you have to keep knocking at the door going forward if they really want transit service there. Questions about that? Okay, we're wrapping this up, guys. Okay, TOD. We already talked about transit-oriented development. Mixed use, that when we do our next comp plans, we really want to pay attention to that and look for opportunities with grants. Two examples are Cleveland, Ohio. They have the Healthline, which has had development from day one when they opened up their rapid transit. Make sure we look at our high capacity corridors and that we try to keep our community and our planners involved. For Columbia, we need to look at those, and Shane will look at the city planners to help explore where we think we have opportunities in the north-south corridors and also downtown and on Stadium Boulevard. So more to come on that in the future. And then last slide, guys. So I'm 4 minutes out of here. Importance of sustainable revenue. I think we beat that dead horse. We know we need to have sustainable funding so that we're not having to go back every year. The org structure is critical to get in place. The minute council approves that, to make sure that we have that in place before we're going to grow too fast. And then last item, Shane, you're going to be back on what date, though? I can't remember.
Okay. I'm not sure we have it defined quite yet.
Oh, for the report?
Yeah, okay. It'll be a council report. We just kind of cover what it's looked like since we combined routes to today, the struggles we've had, what we're doing as far as hiring, those kind of things. And then, like I said, it'll be that matter of there's things we can do just to get back to baseline. That's really what we're talking about here. And then it's in order to implement many of the things that are here, it's how you all want to approach that.
Yeah. And is it, whatever slide it was that had kind of like the Gantt chart, or like when we're starting different things?
Yeah.
Is it my assumption that for when we're talking about the pursue local funding commitments, I am assuming that we are going to be reaching out to the University of Missouri about just a task, like just a conversation about Because as they're looking to actually not do as many parking garages, as they're looking to do this, and they've got a new person that's coming to them from California that might have more, you know, new ideas to do, can we work? Because this is under the previous vice chancellor, you know, Sarah Chenaya was wanting to have this conversation about a joint system. She's no longer with the University of Missouri. So can we start those conversations back up with their staff about what could this look like? And it would incorporate Tiger Line, but really thinking about as we are growing, we want students to ride the bus. We want that because that will help us with ridership, revenues, and then will help us reach more places in Columbia. Because they're not just living downtown, they're living all over town.
Sure. So yes, we obviously will have those conversations. The way that Columbia is set up and the way things have been done make it difficult. As far as where the students live and how the students get to campus and some of those kind of things are some hurdles that make it more difficult, I think, for MU at the periphery to be involved, plus our hours and how that interacts with the students. Currently, what they're asking us to do is really provide more service on campus.
As a parking shuttle.
Basically, yes. And so, and MU knows this, what it actually cost us to provide a bus for an hour and what they pay is about half. And so we've been working to increase that. That being said, they're a big key to our revenue, which keys what grant money we get, and it's also our only current revenue. And so, therefore, you can't, you know, ask them to double what they pay because, you know, they in theory have other options as well. And so we're working in that system. I don't know the status of their current planning because they had some changes there. So we're kind of doing this the first year, working with them, and then see where that takes us next. That's kind of where we're at right now.
Okay. Well, yeah, I would definitely want to have those conversations with it because I think it is just, I mean, all the examples that you gave of best practices of university towns have a strong partnership that's more than just the parking shuttle provider. So. And then we've got a few more minutes, so Vera and then Valerie.
I have more of a process question again. Looking at the maps that have been set for the routes, how did we decide what the routes would be? If we're, you know, looking at the ideal routes tier 4, how did we prioritize residences versus businesses? Were there other considerations that went into place?
I can't, but you go.
You go ahead, take that one.
I'll give you my version first. Usually what we do at any city when we're looking at route planning is typically the routes run on our arterial streets, or if there's a major activity, whether it's a housing, an employment, you know, some kind of service there, all of the routes that we have, we will go drive it and then we'll see, do we think a bus can get, and then usually we drive a bus out there, do we think that's even viable? Can they make a right turn or not? Shane, is there another answer to that? That's what I'll say.
I have a quick follow-up as well before you answer. When we were looking at housing, did we do any work to specifically make sure there were bus routes close to some of our affordable housing?
Perfect. Yep.
Thank you.
Yes. So some of the slides where we started getting into a microtransit possibility and things like that, some of that was to address the location. Like, there's a desire for the bus to go everywhere. And what I often say is, if we take a bus someplace, what's that ridership need to be to continue to do that? Because there's only so many places we can go. And so even in tier 4, there's a lot of residential areas that there could be somebody that wants to ride the bus. And so that's really where I think you start talking about something like microtransit to be able to pick those folks up and either take them where they need to go or get them to a bus stop. And so that's how I would suggest we address some of those locations. Really, it's just what we hear, places we know we don't currently go, how to best do that, how to best, and also into the context of, we think we're going where we need to go for the folks that have limited other options. And so therefore, how do you build off of that versus do something totally different?
Thank you.
All right, Valerie, and then Nick, and then we are at time. So
I just wanted to ask,
I understand a lot of the considerations about how students are getting to campus. And we are mostly being used to move them about campus and satellite. I wonder if we've engaged with MU on, I guess their employment centers. They are more and more tending to have satellite healthcare centers and hubs of employment. And if they have a role in funding those as shuttles where their students work and research at those sections, at those locations, they have healthcare workers that are university employees.
I'm asking Mike if he has any conversations with MU in those negotiations about those locations, because I'm not aware of that. But
not those specific locations. But we have talked to like the education department and students who are doing their practicums and providing them with services. And so they were excited. Now, how much they will actually use that, we don't know. But as far as reaching out to other places, at the end of the day, we can have really great conversations and have some wonderful plans. But until we have enough people to actually implement those plans, it's just theory.
I'm asking how much will they fund that, not how much will they use that. And some of those centers are on our existing lines.
Yeah, we have not talked about that.
Yeah, do the campus bus passes, and I never tried to use it this way, so maybe I could have had the answer myself, but now I don't have one. Could I, as an MU employee, use not only the campus shuttle, but could I get on a city bus and go out to one of the stops?
Yeah, as long as we're fare free.
All right.
Right.
That was silly.
Good question.
I know that. Nonetheless, funding, please.
I just want to say a good supportive word for transit-oriented development, and as we're looking ahead and looking to redo Columbia Imagine, as we're looking at housing, as we're looking at quality of life for people wanting walkable neighborhoods, this really does need to be a part of it, and these things go together. So I think when we're looking at these things from a high level, we need to incorporate all these issues in one and not be, we're focused on transit today. I'm just saying that this is a part of the whole, and as we're, especially as we're looking at planning and planning documents, this needs to be a part of what we're talking about.
And housing development.
Those things go together, and if we can put them closer together, we can be more successful with each one.
All right, so we are 5 minutes past the time, and I know I promised for work sessions, so try to keep them to the time in which you guys gave. So I will expect within the next few months the state of transit update, where some of these additional questions that came up might also be answered that fell within the cracks. If you guys have specific questions that you didn't get answered tonight, just send them to staff, and they'll make sure to incorporate them and share them with all of us. So thank you for the update. It was a very thorough report. I think one thing, yes, if you can make sure whichever numbers are the correct ones, just make sure we know which ones are right.
Yes.
All right, thank you. I'll go ahead and adjourn us at 6:05.